So, Molly, you know, we're going to shift our discussion into CAR T therapy, at least as it relates to diffuse large B-cell. We're actually doing an entire webinar, I think in a few weeks, on CAR T therapy in different diseases. But I'm just curious for your perspective on this. We put this question in here. You know, diffuse large B-cell, most of the time when people relapse, and you know, we can ask Craig to comment on this in a second, they're going to go for an autologous transplant. But then after that, there hadn't been very many options, and now we have CAR T therapy. And one of the questions, Molly, is what kind of shape does somebody need to be in to go through CAR T? You're not getting high-dose chemotherapy as you do in an autologous transplant. Any reflections, Molly, on what you've seen so far with CAR T and what toll it takes on patients compared to something like transplant?
Yeah, I actually have a patient right now. She has diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and she just had a PET scan today, and she's not having any improvement, so they're moving her to CAR T to start her harvest and everything on Friday. And normally, when I think about patients who are going to an allo transplant, I think of a performance status of 1 or 0 and in top shape and the least amount of disease and the least amount of chemotherapy. And with CAR T, that doesn't seem to be necessarily the prerequisites, and that patients may have more side effects from their disease because you can move them more quickly into CAR T as you can get products available. And so they may have a little bit more symptoms, I guess, would be the right word for it. So, and they tolerate it. They can tolerate a CAR T therapy regimen. And like you said, the whack of chemotherapy isn't there, so it's a bit easier to get through.
So in a second, I'm going to ask Mike to kind of go through how CAR T therapy is actually given. But Craig, can you just provide a brief overview of how patients who relapse, there's a pretty high cure rate, and you might want to comment on what the cure rate is when you give upfront R-CHOP, but then how you manage patients who relapse?
So in general, R-CHOP cures about 2/3 of the patients if you lump all the folks together. If you eliminate, I know this is going to sound terrible, but if you eliminate the 10% of the patients that we can never help, they're either too old, they got multiple problems, terrible pathology. So basically, we have about a quarter of the patients that are left that were not cured and or could never be cured. Then you divide the patients into two categories, either they're transplant eligible or they're transplant ineligible. And you tend to treat patients on different pathways based upon, unfortunately, age and comorbidity and their underlying disease. So what I like to do is, and I have a position paper coming out in the JCO about this, is that I give everybody who is less than 72 salvage chemotherapy. Doesn't matter what it is. Whatever is your favorite salvage chemotherapy, you can give it. I tend to give outpatient salvage chemotherapy to patients who are older than 65 and inpatient less. If the patients have a very good response, and in fact, at ASCO last week, there was data presented from the CIBMTR registry that even patients with a partial response, still with a slightly abnormal PET scan, have a 41% cure rate with an auto transplant. So I give everybody salvage therapy, and if they're responding, I send them for an auto transplant. If they're not responding, or they have an inadequate response to salvage therapy, then I gear them up for CAR T cells, provided that they're age appropriate and that they don't have a lot of comorbidities. And I do exactly what Mike said. My knee-jerk response is to give the folks VR-POLA and try to get the patients to CAR T cells. And I really try to put the patients on a clinical trial. And I know Mike will probably mention this as well, but it seems to me that every new CAR T cell construct is probably at worst equivalent to what we have right now. And we can talk about that later, but there's a lot of good ones that are coming down. There must be 20.
Well, we're going to spend an hour and a half on CAR T in a couple of weeks. So this is really just the tasting menu to really kind of get you interested and to come to the other one. But Mike, can you go through at a very brief and basic level the way you explain to a patient how CAR T works? And maybe we're going to show a couple of slides in terms of its efficacy and toxicity. And again, we want you to go back and take a look at the slides and think about them. We're just sort of cruising through them right now. So, Mike, how do you explain to patients the way CAR T works?
Right. So this is an important discussion, obviously, when you're faced with someone who's got recurrent disease with their large cell, and what can we do to get them back in remission and hopefully cured? So with an auto transplant, as I think most everyone on the call knows, that's really relying on the fact that you're giving a very high dose of chemotherapy that is potentially lethally toxic, and you're rescuing that patient from the bone marrow suppression effects of high-dose chemo by giving them their own stem cells back that you've collected and stored. CAR T is completely different, and you have to think of it as an immunotherapy. So in this case, you're collecting T cells from patients. They go to a laboratory where they are modified, they're reprogrammed genetically to target immunologically the lymphoma cells. So you expand them in the laboratory to get a large enough number of cells, and then they're shipped back to the site of the medical center or the hospital where they're going to be delivered, and then they're reinfused to the patient, and they will then home to and target the cells and create an immunologic response. It's in a way analogous to an allo transplant, not an auto, where you're really, you should think of it as a form of cellular immunotherapy. And there are some side effects that we can talk about, and I'm sure we'll get into a little bit with CAR T due to this, what can be a very vigorous immune response. But it's a very important, clever, and sophisticated way of delivering therapy to patients who, for many of them, until this came along, would have had no really good or meaningful treatment options that had a chance to put them into a deep remission.
And I guess, Mike, you know, the bottom line, we could take a look at a lot of the efficacy slides. You can take a look at the ones that we have in there. But the bottom line is this group of patients who otherwise really has no options, you have a significant number of them, very deep responses that seem to be going on for a long time. Do you think that some of these patients might be cured?
Well, I'd be interested to hear what Craig has to say about that, but as we get longer follow-up, there does seem to be a plateau and a proportion of patients going out 2-3 years or more remain in remission without detectable disease. So we're hoping that, in fact, they are cured at that point.
So, I mean, just the fact that we see so many remissions and so deep and we're even talking about cure is really amazing. But Let's just get a little bit of a snapshot of how this plays out in actual practice. And Kim, you have this 59-year-old lady. She presented with actually a big mass in her, she had a big mass in her ovaries. She had extranodal disease. She had multiple forms of therapy. I just want to really focus on what happened in last November. And at that point, she'd already relapsed after transplant and was going through the strategy that we've been talking about before of trying to get a response that can lead into getting CAR T therapy, which is exactly what happened. You talked before about some of the patient ed things in terms of polatuzumab, Kim. Anything else you want to say about this woman? Apparently, she now is in complete remission. I guess we'll see how long this lasts. But any sort of global comments about this case and the impact that CAR T therapy had? And also, I know you weren't actually managing her when she had the CAR T therapy, but what you heard in terms of the toxicities that she had.
So one of the biggest one of, you know, like with a lot of different patients, they'll have their own uniqueness about them. And one of hers is she had a lot of chronic pain from this mass in the ovary, which didn't seem to want to go away. I don't think it ever completely disappeared. And so after her autologous transplant, they re-imaged her and it was still present. So they did the polatuzumab with the Benda and then moved on to the CAR T. She had some social situations that we've talked about, not a lot of financial means and social support. So there were those added problems to her whole treatment situation. So after 2 doses of the polatuzumab, they re-imaged her and she was in complete remission. She went from a 5 to a 1, Duvel. And so then they started the CAR T process. She tolerated the treatment well, from what I understand, and didn't really have any serious side effects from the polatuzumab. So they re-imaged her. They did that in November and December, and then they re-imaged her in January and saw the remission. They collected her, I think, prior to the polatuzumab. Then they moved forward with the CAR T in February. She had some neurotoxicities. They called it a cytokine release syndrome, CRS, and she was treated with steroids and TOCI, and she had some, the neurotoxicity was confusion, altered mental status, and agitation, but that resolved on its own. And they did all this inpatient. They keep them inpatient here for about 2 weeks. And then all those symptoms resolved. She was discharged and they re-imaged her in April and she remains in remission. She's actually being managed locally. So she sees our stem cell people because of the transplant. And then she's managed locally by her local oncologist. And as far as I know, she's doing well. She still has chronic pain, even though she doesn't have disease there anymore. And she, as far as I know, has no current issues at all.
So we're going to move on and talk about Hodgkin lymphoma in a second. But Craig, just a final comment. And again, we urge you to look through the slides about the toxicities that are seen with CAR-T, cytokine release, hypotension, fevers, et cetera. Kim was talking about TOCI, tocilizumab, which can be used. And also these neurologic problems which this patient also had. Any comments on these? It seems, Craig, that these generally are transient. If you can kind of get the patient through that, they seem to do well. Is that what you understand?
Yeah, I think we have a handle on CRS. I think that originally we thought that this was going to be a big issue, but intensive care docs and bone marrow transplanters are well in tune to dealing with this. The neurotoxicity is still somewhat dicey and not necessarily predictable and can be delayed and sort of has to go away on its own, although there's some evidence that, you know, there might be some cytokines that can be used to help in that setting. I've seen in my patients that it's been reversible, but it is scary when it is happening. Just one comment about this case, Kim. This case is a miracle because in a patient who fails auto transplant less than 3 months after, the median survival of those patients are generally measured in days to weeks. So now you've got a patient in remission with a new drug, and now you're giving them another new thing. And I agree with Mike. I think that a quarter of these patients or a third of these patients are going to be cured. Mm-hmm. So it's cool.
Yeah, it is.
Super cool.